Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Eyodia Sampson is a South African actress and author. Her first book, Heal Your Gut, is on its fourth run. The Cape Town-born African Academy-nominated actress and TV personality is also a trained tension and trauma release therapist. She has a diploma in communication and counseling from SACAP and is an integrated wellness consultant. She released her first book, Heal Your Gut, in a quest to promote healthy living and good eating. And her second book takes a more holistic mental health approach. Eyodia's second book is called Know Thyself. Despite a busy acting schedule, including her gracing the small screen as Cheryl in Mnet's newest generational drama, Summertide, Eyodia has been making time to meet her readers. She has had various book launches and conducted workshops around Cape Town. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Eyodia Sampson. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm in cloudy, gloomy Cape Town, South Africa.
Eyodia, tell us, at what age did you feel cool? You want to be in the entertainment world, acting world, and how did that journey progress to where we are today?
I had no clue that I could act and even the ability that there is such a thing as the acting world. As a young girl growing up on the Cape Flats in the volatile years of the 80s, especially 88, 89, I was in matric. 88, I was matric, and my parents were both community workers and in community development. And so, and also I had no clue what I wanted to do with my life. I knew I wanted to be involved with community somehow, because it's in my DNA with my parents being community workers and lay ministers and all that kind of thing. And then from, you know, matric happened, and then mummy said, well, you must go work. You can't be just lying at home. So I got a casual job at Woolworths in 89. And then from pure boredom of my life, I joined a drama group in the community. And this little drama play ended up for 2 weeks at the Baxter Theatre. Mm. You know, back in the day, nice process theatre, Amandla on stage. And my goodness, did I have a natural flair for it, obviously. This little two-week community play was so popular that it, John Slimmon, the Baxter CEO at the time, gave us an 8-week run, and it was sold out. And it was called Lavendale Blues. And there I was, Woolworths by day, just by night. And one night after the show, an old gray, white-haired lady came backstage and inquired about my education level. And it was the late Professor Mavis Taylor of UCT Drama School. Okay. And offers me a bursary to go and study at UCT Drama School. And I'm like, a person can study drama? Who knew? And I jumped into it with all, because it was sort of a golden ticket for something to do. Yeah. And for the fact that I had just raw natural talent was a plus. And it was a mind-boggle getting to UCT in the early 90s. And our year, that particular year, 1990, they took on the biggest contingency of black students that year for the first time as the country was changing.
Yeah.
And it was a real, because literally months before I was dodging rubber bullets and tear gas, tried to get to drama classes and to rehearsals. And the next year, I'm in a mixed cultural group at UCT. Hmm. So it started from there. And like they say, the rest is history. And I was just thinking the other day, it's like almost 32 years later.
So what do you enjoy about acting?
I think telling stories. I was in the early days of the crossover and the country changing, I was quite instrumental in being from the first of people of color to have their stories told on the then SABC, the good old drama days, the last of that actually, before as the country was changing. And I was in a series called Tiss and Davils, which was the story of a family from District 6 that was moved to Hanover Park, and the dynamics of the family on the backdrop of the apartheid and the forced removals. Because it was so raw and so real and so new, I didn't realize with that role, as a young actress, I became the poster girl for a lot of my community stories. And that particular story, the forced removal and on the backdrop of, apartheid. And that's what I probably love the most about the characters that I play is storytelling that I love absolutely.
And do you still do theater productions?
Not as much.
Okay.
What happened throughout the late 90s, early 2000s, I'm married, I have children. And when the soapies came along, the Isi Dingos and Seven Alliance and all those, the phone calls did come. And I looked at my little boys. I had three boys. They were very young still. And I wanted to, I actually made the decision to raise them out of the media. And that I always thought that they were going to be adults and teenagers and adults, and I didn't want them to be exposed. And I stepped back from my career quite a bit throughout the 2000s, right up until 2012 or so. But what I did, I started an industrial theater company. We did plays for government and, you know, awareness and training and awareness productions for government, for companies, for NGOs. And that kept me busy. It gave me flexi time to be with the kids and. And then from about when the festival started, you know, the Potchefstroom Art Club and Kaka and Ka, I threw myself back in a bit of plays, and twice a year I would do a play production. And that was just right up until 2019 before COVID happened and so on.
So what is the difference for the listening audience who may not be aware, the difference for being on stage compared to being behind a camera?
Well, stage is just you are alive because it's instant. There's no second take or can I do it again? The audience that is live, either you have them or you don't. And so the gratification or the... how can I say, the instant realization if you're doing it properly, if you're grabbing the audience, yeah, it's so instant. And it's so electrifying, the adrenaline rush. That's why a lot of actors love doing live theater, because it's a pure, 100% pure adrenaline rush to really convince the audience of your character, where you are, the settings, and what you've rehearsed for weeks, that you have only that moment to draw them in. Otherwise, you've lost them. With TV and camera, can I do that again? I didn't feel that moment. Can we take another take? And so you have a time to fix it or try a new angle in the way of your delivering a character.
So you mentioned regarding theater and being on stage about that instant realization about having to allow the audience to be connected and grabbed by the story. So in situations, I'm putting it out there that there've only been a few, not many, but in situations when you felt the audience weren't being grabbed or weren't connecting, how do you push through that? Do you just carry on and just hope that they'll connect, or what happens?
Yes. And you know, every night you sometimes it's just a timing thing. You know, if you're in an ensemble and you play different characters, sometimes one of the artists is off or the actors are off or you are off, and then the timing is just not right and you just can't get the flow and the rhythm. And some nights is just spot on.
Yeah.
And every breath and every nuance, the audience is living every moment with you.
Yeah.
You try when you sense that it's not happening.
Yeah.
You try your best to bring it there. But sometimes that is also making it more anxious that
yes.
And then understood. You must just do it as best as you can. Yeah.
Yeah. So now you're in the series currently on Mnet Summertide.
Yes.
So what's next on the horizon in the acting space? Have you got anything that you're busy filming or doing?
Yes,
or?
No. There's a lot happening. And I'm personally so grateful that a lot of TV, a lot of film is happening. Seems like after the COVID slump, everything is rushing to the fore, which is wonderful for us as artists because there's a lot happening and international stuff. I just got confirmed literally days ago for a nice little project that is coming along. It just seems like a lovely little quirky story of a young girl. She's taken on looking for, in the community, things get lost and then she becomes detective to find them.
Okay.
And it's a teenage story and quirky characters. And then there's just bizarre little incidences and things, but it's very colorful. Anyway, I'll get to the name of the genre. They had a TikTok thing also where you stand in front of colorful backgrounds and then you just do the like quirky stuff. Anyway, this new project has that feel.
Yes.
And then we also, there's a sitcom coming out and we haven't had sitcoms for a very long time. And Shimmy Isaacs wrote and produced this sitcom.
Now, let's dive into your book. When did you decide, cool, you want to write a book? What was the dawning of a realization that, cool, this was going to happen? Was there resistance? Let's unpack your journey a bit.
First of all, I must actually start by the beginning. I went throughout my schooling years thinking that I'm just delayed and there's something wrong with my brain and I couldn't particularly spell and was very anxious about reading and writing, just to find out at the first year university that I'm dyslexic and it had a name, that I'm not actually stupid. But the damage was done because I had insensitive teachers that probably also didn't know and used to beat you over the hand because you couldn't read. And so by first year university, I've realized that what I have had a name.
Yeah.
And so the resistance to read and to be involved in anything literally was quite anxious driven for me and had a bit of a insecurity about it.
Yeah.
During COVID, what happened with my first cookbook, Heal Your Gut, during COVID, you know, we all were locked down and I started going live while I was cooking supper and my sons were still at home. So I was cooking low carb meals and people were quite interested in this low carb business because I've been with Professor Tim Noakes for the best part of 9-10 years taking the low carb and what Professor Noakes advertise into communities because of my notoriety and my work that I do in the communities. I teamed up with him and we started a health Eat Better South Africa organization to explain to people why they are diabetic and. So I got onto that gut health is one of the core things for optimum health.
Yeah.
And I was cooking low-carb meals on my videos and people wanted to know. And then a little following happened. I didn't necessarily wanted a following. And they said to me, why don't I put what I cook in a cookbook?
Yes.
And I went, no, man, I don't want to do a cookbook. Go and Google it. And but then I realized if you want low carb meals, Google it.
Yes.
And then I realized there's a portion of my community that often is not, you know, technically savvy, you know, and especially older women of my community that wouldn't know how to Google and wouldn't understand why we must eat the way we eat. Anyway, they convinced me to write the cookbook, but the prefix of the cookbook, not the recipes as much, was more important to explain why we must eat, why we must cut the processed foods, why the science in its simplest form. I got the opportunity to write Heal Your Gut. And that, it's now the third year, and it's just been flying off the shelves, because people's really been turning their health around. And the diabetes have gone into remission. The cancers have gone into remission. And they're coming off their meds, and it was just wonderful. And I then also, during the time that I wasn't acting as much, went back to studying. I am a tension and trauma release practitioner. I'm a therapist, a counselor. I'm a couples counselor and all that. And then this lives, not just the cooking happened, I started doing talks on it, on various things that I was encountering in counseling and also my personal journey. And I realized that many women are struggling, or just people are struggling when they hit midlife. There's a shift that happens. You start questioning yourself, and you, which I did. I'm 55 now, and you know, you start wondering what life is about, and you just become despaired, you know, with life. And then you do what we all do. We start pointing fingers. If the husband is just more romantic, if the work colleagues is just lekker, if the boss can just leave you alone. And I decided to take my journey and what I was experiencing in therapy and combining it into a little manual. It's a little handbook that with chapters in, and questions behind after every chapter that you have to answer for yourself.
Yes.
And this is how the second installment of To Know Thyself, because I found that many people, they want to be happy, but they have no clue of what actually will make them happy. And that's how the second book, Know Thyself, came about.
It's interesting, is most people, they perceive that external people or things or events will make them happy, but it's not that. It's about them being happy within themselves, and then those other outside experiences will pull that in.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely. And I think, you say, when about 10, 15 years ago, when I started this journey, I wasn't particularly, I had a good husband. I had a good life. The kids were okay, and we had a bit of money that we could get travel and go overseas and have a bit of holiday. Things were okay, and yet I was so displeased with myself.
Yes.
And I had to go unpack that to understand what is going on. And it was, I had to go get back to the essence of me, who I truly was before life happened, and what gave me the greatest joy.
Yes.
And this little manual is sort of a beginning for you to, many times in therapy, we would unpack that over a period of time to get to the core of you. But I thought many people don't have the luxury and the resources to go to therapy, or even the time, or even the bravery to go to therapy.
Yeah.
And this is a wonderful little book to start that journey.
Yeah. It's interesting because you hear a lot of people when they're looking for a partner, like they, you know, their romantic partner, so to speak. You often hear people say, oh, they want to find someone to make them happy. Well, this is the person who's going to make me happy. And it's very dangerous that, because no one can ever make you happy, because you need to be happy within yourself. And then there needs to be a complement with that other person.
Absolutely. And you are now spotting, I mean, we launched the book in February, and I'm already busy with the third installment of the trilogy. And that is relationships. Being in a relationship with my husband for the last 30 years, I saw the potholes that especially we as couples get into, where, as you said, we expecting the other one to make us happy. Yeah. And I was there too. And I, as I said, I just thought if he's a bit more romantic then, and I had to discover if he had bought me flowers every day, I would have beaten him with the flowers because it wasn't the flowers or the romantic gestures.
Yeah.
I was displeased with me.
Yeah.
And I was grappling with things inside of me. And I had to get to a point where I could be, I'm happy. I am happy without the stuff and what he does and what he doesn't do. And. So the third installment will be a relationship book and how we make so much mistakes in an attempt, because I think I'm about getting people to be together. We aren't meant to be alone. So people make, no, it's better to be alone. No, it's just, and I find that in my therapy, it's just a mechanism to not to feel hurt again. So you end up being alone. But there's too much research and science that says when you're alone, all your stress hormones go up, all your inflammation markers go up, anxiety goes up, because we are tribal people. We meant to be in a tribe for protection, for safety, for community, for everything, and for our biology.
Fascinating journey of having books and authoring and writing and acting and lots of things coming up. So as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
I think for me, I've gone through a process of first fixing my health.
Yes.
I find that when your health is well, if you eat the way the body is designed, you need sunlight, vitamin D, you need green leafy vegetables, not salads, just anything that's green and healthy, a bit of protein and water and good sleep and good relationships. Fix that, and then we can deal with the mental issues, because the mental health is off the charts at the moment. And people don't understand. Sometimes it's literally what they put in their mouths and what they eat that is causing. And there's too much research that the gut health, the gut brain axis, what you put in your mouth affects your brain health, and which in turn affects your emotional health, depression and anxiety and all those kind of things. And then to work on yourself, to get yourself to be at a place where you can be happy and not happy. We all think that life must be blissful, but just contented with where you are.
Yeah.
And I promise you that brings relationships, that brings peace of mind, that brings joy in career, that brings you to your true essence at the end of the day. And I am well on my way there. I mean, at 55, I really feel that I can live another 50 years because this is what I do, help people understand, and it gives me great, great joy.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.